The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
Conceive, believe, achieve. Shut the f*** up.
And new undisputed UFC middleweight champion of the world, Michael the Count Bisping.
This is Believe You Me on the Gas Digital Network.
We're back, consistent, twice a week. We'll never fail you, baby boys.
I have nothing better to do with my time, Lewis. I don't have a gorgeous wife. I don't have three children. I don't have many, many obligations. All I want to do is sit in this pokey little room, stare at you through a digital screen and speak into this somewhat malfunctioning microphone.
Are you having issues with your mic again?
No, I don't. It just happens sometimes. Welcome to the show, everybody. Weird intro there. I don't know why I went there. Where did we start, Lewis? We got such a packed show. Just to coin a phrase from the Legion of Skanks, we got a hell of a show planned for you today.
We do. We have a great show planned today. A lot to talk about in the world of mixed martial arts and beyond. That's absolutely not true. It's kind of a slow news week right now. The quiet before the storm, the Conor McGregor fight is happening next weekend?
Next week. But you know, it is weird because there hasn't been, I notice a lot of people saying this on Twitter, there hasn't been, you know, the general, I don't know, the hype, for want of a better word, there hasn't been that hype, but it is still a week away. And to be honest, you know, you don't really need it. You know, I mean, there just hasn't been much hype. But I guess next week, I think we said this last time, the embeddings will start. He'll start doing all the interviews, you know what I mean? So, all the clickbaity, if you will, shit will start popping up. All the sound bites from McGregor and Cerrone and stuff like that. When they start media week, when they get to Vegas, I know Conor is in Vegas already right now. Obviously, coming from Ireland, you want to get there early. But Cerrone will probably get there next week, and then it'll all kick off. But it has been pretty quiet, though, regarding that.
Is there sort of a? I mean, maybe it's a different time, right? Like somebody like Conor. You know, the UFC knows, like, how much value is a commercial? How much value does a commercial have? Spending however many millions of dollars on commercial TV spots for a Conor McGregor fight? Because I haven't seen many. I haven't seen really much advertisements, no billboards, no nothing. You're right. But maybe they've looked at it and they said, hey, you know what? When we have Conor involved, every podcast, every TV show, every sports program, everybody's talking about the fight anyway. That is advertisement. I mean, look, the reality is there are companies that pay us to talk about their products on this show. We talk about the UFC absolutely every week in depth with passion in a very real way. So it sort of has this, when you have an amazing product, you have this built-in sort of advertising for it as it is. And maybe they just said, hey, you know what? When we have somebody like Conor on, everyone's talking as it is. The social media imprints are probably through the roof. The amount of people tweeting about it and using the hashtag are probably, you know, astronomical as it is. So why spend all the money? Why not put that money back where it counts in the fighters' pockets?
Well, that is correct, but there has been some, you know, some advertisements, as we said on the last show, there was some, you know, TV stuff during ESPN and whatnot. But what I was going to say, you touched on something there. I mean, at the end of the day, look at this. I'm looking at Conor's Instagram account here. 33.3 million people, right? You got to now, here's the thing. A lot of people think, not a lot of people, but people have made mistakes. I remember when I grappled Chael Sonnen. Back in the day, it was yourshow.tv. And their entire business model was, well, listen, because they had myself, they had Rey Mysterio from the WWE, they had Chael Sonnen, they had Roy Jones Jr. They had a bunch of names like that on, you know, the Kurt Angle, stuff like that. And everybody had a decent social media following. So they thought, well, listen, with everybody's social media following, if they all tweet about it, et cetera, et cetera, that's going to turn into a lot of pay-per-view buys. Now, of course, that didn't happen. A, because yourshow.tv, no one's fucking heard of it. So nobody's, you know, confident giving them money. And B, that's not the way the world works. However, it does to a certain degree. And when somebody's got 33 1.3 million followers. Of those, a lot of them are fans. Unfortunately, in this day and age, a lot of people just follow people to talk shit. So not everybody is a fan. But
those are also, sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
5%, 5% of those people buy the pay-per-view. That's 1.5 million pay-per-view buys, 1.7, something like that, right there. Now, again, as I said, that doesn't translate like that. But still, all he's got to do is a few posts about his fight, which he is. He's posting about the training camp. He's posting that he's in Vegas. That's how I knew he was already in Vegas. Things like that. You know what I mean? So the marketing's already there. Trust me, social media is such a powerful driver. I guess you need TV commercials to try and reach the people that don't follow, you know, fighters on social media, the casuals. But still, you know, when you've got massive social media presence like that, it kind of sells itself.
It's also, they've figured out a way to integrate social media and connecting it to getting the media. It's faster. It's not perfect yet, but eventually what the UFC wants and what every, you know, media company wants, every production company wants, right, is they want you to be able to go, they tweet it out and then you click that link, you automatically pay for the pay-per-view and you're watching the pay-per-view right there. They haven't done that yet. I don't think you could, like, you just click on a link right there and then you're watching the pay-per-view. As soon as they can connect that and figure out how to make that easy, because I made that jump recently. Like, I put Apple Pay on my phone and now I'll never go back. To not have to take out my wallet, to just have to literally just go, oh, here, I got to pay for something. Dude, look at my face, click right there. Making it so smooth and fast makes me want to spend more money. And I do spend more money. If you're looking at the amount of money that I'm spending now, it's just easier to spend that fucking money.
But Lewis, you got so much of it. You're of good. Course. You've got fucking assistants. You've got staff. You've got multiple houses. You've got mansions in fucking Jamaica. It's fine. Apple Pay, Amazon Pay, good old hard-fashioned cash. Lewis has got it coming out of his ears, guys. He's fine. What is the beauty of Apple Pay? So you just look at your phone and then you just dump, and do most places accept that?
Most places accept it now. So instead of having to pull out your card and put it in and type your thing, you just have your card right in your phone. You put your phone right next to whatever thing, and then it's done. And it's super easy. And even, like, little things, like just clicking a button, like, if I want to, like, I have my PayPal connected to sort of everything in my phone, my Apple Pay connected. So if I want to pay for something now, there's no more typing in my credit card number to a website. It's all just sort of done and easy. And I think that right now it's way easier to get that content than it used to be back in the day.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I want to do stay on topic, but regarding the whole Apple Pay thing, and I don't want to shit on my son two episodes in a row, but Callum has Apple Pay. I don't even have Apple Pay. And he's up there, he's beep, 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 beeping all over the place. And I'm like, and I said to Rebecca recently, I said, oh, what about this? Does he need some money? Oh, he's fine. He'll just do it on Apple Pay. But it's our account that's linked to the Apple Pay. I'm like, whoa, hold on. We got to stop this. We can't have this guy Apple Paying all over the place.
Well, there's a connection you have when you have cash. I took out cash for maybe the first time in like 2 months. I went to a lunch with a bunch of comedians and we all took out, everyone's going to the ATM to take out cash. It's so weird to even hold cash anymore, but it feels like there's an emotional connection when you have the money. You're like, no, it's mine. I don't want to give it to you. But when it's just clicking a button, there's nothing to it. It's just, I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm older and I grew up.
Because it's tangible. When you see the cash in your hands, you realize the worth of it. But when it's just, oh, whatever, ding, some numbers change on a screen if you were to look at your bank account. It is way easier to overspend. But I like cash. If I go out, if I don't have cash in my wallet, I'm very uneasy. I need to have cash on me at all times. Maybe that is an old-fashioned thing. But, you know, if I'm out and about, you want to tip someone, you want to buy something, I don't want to put... I don't know. I like to have cash. Maybe that's just an old school thing. Cash is king wherever you go. Oh, listen, you're trying to get in somewhere and there's a bit of a problem. You say, hey, boom, there you go. There's $20. Boom. All of a sudden, front of the line. Now, listen, being a former world champion, that's a hypothetical situation because I just sauntered to the front of everywhere, which is a joke. I'm joking. But do you see what I'm saying? Cash is king. Cash will always have a place, my friend.
I don't know. Have you had this happen recently where you go into a place and they don't accept cash?
No, I always, if I ever, you know, I'm confronted with a situation where I can't have what I want, I find a nice little bit of cash slidden across the table.
Yeah.
Gets you what you want. You know, and you can't do that with Apple Pay.
Can't Apple Pay?
Can't do that with PayPal.
You could Venmo them. You could tell the bouncer, like, hey, dude, I'll Venmo if you get me into the club. Right.
Yeah, and that just doesn't sound nowhere near as sexy, does it? You know, you're with some chick, you're like, hey, what's up? I'll Venmo you. Fucking Venmo. No, pull out a nice, crisp $100 bill. boom, there you go, baby boy. You're walking in, you know, like fucking the guy from Goodfellas when he takes you into the restaurant. You know what I mean? She's like, oh my God. And you're like, yeah, it's just how I roll. Can't do that with Venmo, Apple Pay, none of that shit.
Have you ever been to a place where they don't accept cash? That happened to me very recently. There's like two or three places that I know of. I know the juice press at Equinox doesn't accept cash and drives me out of my fucking mind. And they don't let you pay with your membership. So it's like you have to, like, if you want to get a juice, you have to have your card on you. It drives me wild. But yeah, there's places now where you go in and like, oh yeah, sorry, we don't accept cash. And I'm like, what country are we in? You cannot accept cash. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. That's like the master currency. Cash, as I just said, is king. It's crazy. But you know, to be honest, I do think in the future it will be obsolete. It will be a thing of the past eventually. Because it is, I tell you what, with the American currency, with dollars, the coins are a real issue to me. Who the fuck wants those coins? They're worthless. Like in the UK, the coins are valuable. You know what I mean? You got £2 coins. You're not throwing away £2 coins. You're not saying to the cashier, oh, you're fine, I don't want the change. But out here, if it's like a few cents, I'm like, I'll keep it. I don't want it. I don't need 3 pennies dangling and clinging about in my pocket. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm like, no, that's fine. In England, though, some of those coins, they're worth a lot of money. You got a lot of twos and ones and 50 pence pieces in your pocket. Dude, you could be having a pretty half decent night out of those coins.
I notice when my pocket, it just has anything in it, really anything. Like if I go into my pocket and there's like a little whatever it is, a fucking gum wrapper and a dollar and, you know, 8 different coins and a MetroCard, it gives me a sense of anxiety. So I try to keep my pockets empty at all times. So I never really carry cash that often. Change, I will never in a million, like I'll never take the change ever. Yeah. They have that now. That's actually kind of cool on certain cards. They have it like automatically built into your bank card where anytime you, let's say you spend like, $10.59, that last 41 cents, whatever rounds up to the next dollar, they automatically invest for you. So you don't even think about it. It's just like spare change. And then it just accrues. And then you're investing. Really? And then all of a sudden, yeah, it's a really cool thing. I think certain banks do it. I know there's apps you could download specifically for that, but it's actually kind of a cool concept because I would never in a million years think to do something like that.
It is actually a very cool concept, and I like it because I don't want change. I'm sorry, I might sound a bit snobby here, but it's somewhat wholly unattractive if a guy walks up and he's got tons of pennies jingling in his pocket. Okay, it's not a sexy look, but I'm just going to let you know right now, Luce, don't think you're going to get rich off that 41 cent investment, okay? You're going to need a hell of a return to get to anything worth bothering. I mean, maybe one day you might have enough to scrape by and buy a hot dog out of that 41 cents, but it's going to take a while. I mean, where are they investing this 41 cents? I want to know more.
Well, what I think you have leftover change more often than you think. So every time you swipe your card, every coffee you get when it's $7.19, that's 81 cents more. By the end of the day, it's probably a few dollars per day of leftover. By the end of the month, that's probably a couple $100 per month. By the end of the year, holy shit, baby boy, you got a new iPhone for Callum.
Sky's the limit. The poor motherfucker is going to be back being able to contact his estranged girlfriend. I remember my mom and dad, when they were trying to quit smoking back in the day when they were together, which was a long time ago. Remember, they used to have these things. If you smoke, I don't know, one pack of cigarettes a day, then they work it out over a year, how much money that is, how better off you're going to be. But it never works out like that. You got extra money in your pocket, you spend more, but whatever. But yeah, New Year, don't smoke, everybody. Okay, what are we talking about? What are we talking about here? Because that wasn't the plan. We did want to open with, and we're a little bit late to the party, you know, because it happened on Sunday night. The Golden Globes. Listen, we're not here to talk about the Golden Globes and who won and whatnot and all the rest of it. But Ricky Gervais hosting it. I'm a massive fan of Ricky Gervais. I'm assuming you are as well,
being a
comedian. In fact, what do you think of Ricky Gervais and his style of comedy, Lewis?
Brilliant. Ricky Gervais is hilarious. He, obviously first learned about him from The Office when everyone saw the American Office and they were like, oh, this is just a British, you know, knockoff. Everyone went back and watched the old Office with Ricky Gervais. I think that's maybe the
which
first
time. Which is way better. Way better, right?
It's fine. Very funny. But
oh, my God.
You know.
Are you serious?
The American Office is pretty incredible. The other problem is you have to, like, the speech patterns, you're going to think it's better because you just, the way they talk
understand
and the humor.
English.
Timing is very, very big in comedy, and I think that's a big, people don't really talk about that difference between British and American comedy, so timing is such a huge part of it, and when you're talking about people's different speech patterns, just the different language you guys use, the different, phrases that we're not really familiar with, it sort of throws off the timing and the perception of the words. So it's just a little off. I understand why you probably think that's better, but you have to understand why we think the American office is better.
No. I do. Listen, what's his name? Steve Carell. Steve Carell is awesome. He's very, very funny, and the American office is good, but it's not as good. Simple as that. You know, I mean, you can't. What are you saying? You're saying that Ricky Gervais doesn't have comedy timing? He's one of the most successful comics in the world. That is essentially what you just said. The timing's off. Listen, in America, timing's everything with our comedy. You guys, you just speak in funny accents and say stupid words that don't make sense, and everyone thinks it's funny. That's essentially what you said. So you're saying that Ricky Gervais has ill-equipped comedy timing, and that's why he got to host the Golden Globes for a fifth time in a row.
I'm saying he's a goddamn hack and a joke thief. I'll say it right now on the show. I'm coming at you, Ricky Gervais. No, I'm saying that I think culturally speaking, they don't talk about that enough. Hey, Mike, let's just take a quick moment and talk about one of our incredible sponsors, which is Blue Chew. BlueChew.com is the website. It's basically a performance enhancement drug for the bedroom. You guys probably have heard of Viagra or Cialis. Blue Chew uses the same active ingredient as both of those drugs, except it's a fraction of the price. There's no doctor. There's no middleman. You order it right online. You see an online physician, and they prescribe it to you right there. And then it shows up at your door, Mr. Bisping. How convenient is that?
Well, it's very, very convenient. But here's the thing. Listen, who doesn't want to have a better time in the bedroom? You know, you're celebrating the love, you know, or maybe it's a stranger. Who knows? Maybe it's your wife of a long time. Maybe it's a one-night hookup. Who cares? But what you want is the best possible experience. Listen, if you've got erectile dysfunction or anything like that, it will help with that. But this is designed as a bedroom enhancement. And as you said, they do deliver straight to your door. No need to go see a doctor. And you know, it's a little embarrassing, right? Nobody wants to have those conversations. This way, you just go online, you fill in the forms, no doctor visit, no awkward conversation, as I said, no waiting in line at the pharmacy, and it ships directly to your door in discreet packaging. Also, the chewables from Blue Chew, they're prescribed, obviously, from a doctor, and you can take them on a full or an empty stomach, Lewis.
I know, and I love it. My stomach's usually full these days, so this is actually perfect. On top of that, here's the coolest part of all, Michael Bisping. We're going to give you a free trial. Listeners of this show get to try out Blue Chew for free. All you got to do is pay $5 shipping. Go to BlueChew.com, BlueChew.com, and use the promo code BELIEVE. You get a free trial of Blue Chew.
You get a free trial, but we do not provide the sexual partner, okay? Unfortunately, you're going to have to find that yourself. If you're going to go Tinder, go Tinder. You want to go to the bar, whatever it is you do to hunt down a sexual partner. Or in fact, don't hunt them down. That sounds weird.
Edit that bit out.
Do not hunt sexual partners, okay? Go out there and just like try a good old-fashioned chat-up lives. If you are successful, if you have a wife, a boyfriend, a significant other, you will love this. So as Lewis said, bluechew.com. The promo code is BELIEVE. And as he said, $5 shipping. And you get a free month. Bluechew.com. Promo code BELIEVE. All right, let's get on with it. Where were we?
Ricky Gervais did an incredible job at the Golden Globes. This is just a little highlight reel. Let's play some of this.
Yeah.
This is really great, really funny. Just tearing apart the industry. Didn't give a fuck. That was his whole theme. Was like, I don't care. It's my last year. I don't want to be here. So funny. So here, this is just a little highlight reel.
Talking of all you perverts, it was a big year. It was a big year for paedophile movies. Surviving R. Kelly, Leaving Neverland, Two Popes. Shut up. I don't care.
Look at him.
You could binge watch the entire first season of Afterlife instead of watching this show. That's a show about a man who wants to kill himself because his wife dies of cancer. And it's still more fun than this. Okay? Spoiler alert, season two is on the way. So in the end, he obviously didn't kill himself. Just like Jeffrey Epstein. Shut up. I know he's your friend, but I don't care. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, nearly 3 hours long, Leonardo DiCaprio attended the premiere, and by the end, his date was too old for him. So
that was great.
All right, we got it, I think.
Leo had a good sense of humor with it. You know, the best bit was, listen, at the end, he said, come on. He said, you guys know nothing about the real world. Okay, he said, you know nothing about the real world. In fact, most of you spent less time in school than Greta Thunberg. He said, so when you win, come up here, accept your little award, come up, accept it, thank your agent, thank your God, and fuck off. No one cares about your views on politics or culture. And the entire room. I mean, their faces. They a lot of them laughed. A lot of them were just like, this fucking guy. Because he went up there in front of Hollywood's elite. You know what I mean? And he's in show business. You know what I mean? And went up there to the Hollywood elite and just told them all to go fuck themselves and said exactly what he thought. It was ballsy. It was hilarious. The guy's a fucking genius. And you can say that Steve Carell did a better job on The American Office or not. Steve Carell isn't hosting the Oscars. We're not talking about Steve Carell right now. I got sweaty armpits. I got to stop doing that. But whatever. Just been to the gym. Michael Hearn, 30-day fast program. You haven't been. Lewis, give me your take.
So, yeah, incredible. Obviously, you know, just I love the take. My problem with what they're doing now is like they're, you know, all of the left wing media sites are going like, yeah, right wingers sure are loving the Ricky Gervais thing. And you're like, dude, this is nothing. He's saying to stay out of politics, to politicize a statement saying, hey, I'm not being political. And I think we should all, as Hollywood's elite, the most privileged of the most privileged in the entire world, the richest people in the entire world, the people that... Not my coffee, thank God. But the people that have probably, you know, not everybody, but I hate to broad stroke everybody, but you're talking about a very privileged group of people that have been able to spend their lives acting and studying acting. And like, I don't know, the kids who got to go off to acting school and acting camp and do theater as kids, they were pretty privileged for the most part. Not every one of them, but the kids that I knew, it really wasn't the poor kids that were sort of having those opportunities or sort of having those interests. So you have this room of the richest people in the world who have been rich forever, sort of talking down to people and talking down to real people about how they should live their lives when they don't have sort of any concept of what it's like to be a real person anymore. And I love that side of it. And to politicize that and to say that that is a right wing concept or some sort of some alt-right thing, it's like, guys, I mean, it's almost funny. It's comical in a weird way to watch them do that after his whole speech is about not politicizing things.
Yeah, I know. And I do apologize because it looks like I wasn't listening. I am listening. He did actually put out a tweet about that yesterday or the day before about that, addressing that exact issue. I was just trying to find it. But it's escaping me right now. But yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Listen, you know, I thought it was great. I thought it was a good slap in the face for some of those people. Listen, has he got a point? Yeah, he's got a point. Absolutely, he's got a point. I mean, the thing is, Ricky Gervais, I love that he's just this. He's so cynical. He's so cynical of it all. He's a very, very hard atheist, which, you know, I agree with him there, but, you know, I respect everybody's views. Yeah, it was just funny. I thought it was great. And basically, at the end of the day, he went up there and he told some jokes. And if you want to get offended, then you're going to find a way to be offended. But if you've got a good sense of humor, just open up your mind, open up your heart, and just laugh at what he's saying. You know, I don't think it was directed at one person in particular. You know, he's talking about Harvey Weinstein being in prison. Oh, sorry, you're all going to have to fly home on your own jets this time. You know, I don't know. Oh, hold on. There was something. He did direct something at one person. Simply pointing out whether someone is left or right isn't winning the argument. If a joke is good enough, it can be enjoyed by anybody. 3, it's not all about you. And 4, just because you're offended doesn't mean you're right. In fact, I think I retweeted that yesterday. Yeah, just because you're offended doesn't mean you're right. But there was somebody, I forget who it was, he did direct. It was a woman. He directed something in particular, one woman. But anyway, whatever. Great job, Ricky Gervais. Thank you for flying the flag and, you know, showing people what real humor is, Lewis.
It was great, man. And I love it. And I'm hoping that more and more people take those chances. The reason why it's great for Ricky Gervais to do something like that, because look, me and the Legion of Skanks and us taking the dumb stance that we take and saying dumb jokes, and it's different. For somebody to go on mainstream TV, the biggest night of the year, one of the biggest nights of the year, one of the most viewed nights of the year, and to say, hey, you know what, fuck it. I'm going to tell it like it is. I'm going to take some chances. I'm going to ruffle some feathers. Be a little bit offensive. Be mildly offensive. Remember when late night used to be mildly offensive? Like, you'd watch like a late night talk show and there'd be comedians and people saying edgy shit, and then they could say curse words after a certain time of the night because it was like, ooh. We're sort of losing that thing, and everyone's a fucking nerd now. I don't know. We shouldn't be. Everyone's just like, everyone's trying to be like a good person. I don't know. That's not fun. That's not what it was. When I was a kid growing up, I just kind of wanted to watch. I don't know. I wanted to watch things be a little bit dangerous sometimes. The music that I listened to, the movies that I watched, it was offensive. And your mom wasn't supposed to dig it. Your grandma wasn't supposed to dig it. We were supposed to be watching some crazy shit.
It's called being edgy. You know what I mean? You want to be edgy. You don't want to be safe. You don't want to be vanilla. You don't want to be, you know, something that everybody will find perfectly reasonable. And, oh, yeah, that was a solid statement that he made there. No, you want to be a little bit controversial. You want to be a little bit edgy. And as you said, Ricky Gervais is out there. I mean, there's a man that's got a lot to lose. Also, on the flip side, he's made a shit ton of money. I remember he was on Howard Stern once, and he said that he got paid a ridiculous amount of money to fly out to China and do a corporate set. And Howard Stern was trying to get out of him what the amount of money was. And he wouldn't say. And he never did it. He did it. He wouldn't do the show because it was too much money. And he said it was just disgusting. And he said, well, what was it? More than $1 million? He said, yes. And he was like, what, $10 million? He said, well, it was somewhere between $1 and $10 million to just fly on a private jet to China and tell some jokes for an hour. Yeah, and he said, you know what, to be honest, I'm not going to do it because it's just fucking scandalous, you know? So, yes, he's made a lot of money. So I guess if he did lose everything, he'd still be very happy. And there's still a massive market for somebody like Ricky Gervais. But still, as you said, for me and you to sit here and talk shit like this, all right, we're still fucking clawing away to get our fucking 60,000 fucking, we're on 59,900 fucking subscribers on YouTube. What is going on? Ricky Gervais tweeted yesterday, thanks to the 300,000 new Twitter followers I got yesterday. Okay, guys, we need some Ricky Gervais action in our life. What the fuck is going on?
I agree with you. I really do. And to be honest with you, if we were going to give 80,000, what are we doing? What were we giving them?
I don't know what we're doing. I am not held accountable to things we say on this podcast.
Shit.
Okay.
Shit.
What?
Fuck.
What?
I promised a girl signed gloves from you for some charity thing, and I haven't gotten them from you, and I keep on forgetting every time I see you.
It's the worst. I've promised so many people things for charity. But listen, I get emails, I get Instagram messages, and it sounds like a good cause. And all they got to do is message me and say, hey, Mike, would you sign some gloves and send them to us because we're doing a charity auction? I'm like, yeah.
Every time.
I would love to do that. I would, of course, I'll always say yes. But the reality, that's all they got to do. They've got to type into a phone while sat on the toilet taking a dump, okay? Mm. That's all they got to do. For me, I've got to find the gloves, $60 a pair. I've then got to sign the gloves.
You got to buy a marker. Those are expensive.
That takes 10 minutes in my house. Look, where's the Sharpie? You find one, it doesn't work. Shit. And then you've got to like go over your signature again because it kind of started, but then it ran out. You know what I mean? It's like fucking looking for Sharpies. Then you do that. Then I've got to wrap them. Okay. Then I got to go down to the post office and I got to fucking give them the address. Then I got to pay for postage and all the rest of it. Okay. Listen, I want to send signed gloves. I want to send signed posters. I want to do all that stuff. But there's a reason I became a fighter in the first place, because clerical duties are not my strong point. Go ahead. Hand raised at the back.
I think we should. Here's the thing. And this chick is listening. You need to message me again right now. She's definitely listening. You need to message me again because your message, lady, listen to me.
Message me.
No, she tried to message you. You don't get back to her. Listen to me. This message is buried so fucking deep. We're not trying to knock your friend who's dying of something or other the assigned gloves to auction off. We want to do that. But you need to message us again. And I got to be honest with you, you might need to send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Michael Bisping because...
So listen.
It's got to go through me to him, then it's got to go to him, to his wife, to the post office. There's a lot of ways that we're going to fall off here, and we want to give you the assigned gloves.
He's trying to make him cry.
Fuck him.
You're right. And whilst we're on this, and we do have a bunch of MMA topics that we're going to get to in just a second, I promise. You got to be careful. And I'm going to be very controversial in what I'm about to say, right? But I had this recently. How do you know this person's dying, right? Because I had somebody message me, right? And just recently, they were asking for something for the friend, and it was a private message on Instagram that, you know, just went into the filtered messages because I don't follow them. You know what I mean? And I'm bored one day and I'm scrolling through and I try to respond. I do 5 to 10 a day. The problem is sometimes when you do that, then you open the floodgates and they message you constantly. But still,
well, then
what
will happen is you stop answering you go on vacation for a week or you're on the road. You just don't get to them and it gets buried. And then you get a person that's offended and then they go, oh yeah, I guess you're too good for me now. You're like, dude, are you fucking crazy? I answer everybody back. I try.
I messaged you back to be nice. I said, thank you very much for your kind words. Wish you all the best in the future going forward. So anyway, this person, I came across his message and he was saying that his friend was dying, okay, and wanted something. And then he comes back and says that, and I never responded because I never saw the message. And now he's saying that he's dying. Okay, and can I get him tickets to UFC London and can he meet me there? And then I'm like, well, hold on. The message before was that his friend was dying and now he's dying. So then I messaged back and I said, look, listen, I said, sorry, bud. I said, forgive me. I said, and if I'm wrong here, I do apologize.
Wait, you called him out?
Forgive me if I'm a little skeptical, but it seems like there's a lot of people in your life that are dying. Okay. Oh, no. Your friend's dying and now you're dying. Anyway, he came back with all the proof. He had pictures of him on a ventilator, in a wheelchair, all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, shit. So anyway, I'm making that happen. You know, who knows? Maybe he's playing me big time.
Yeah. Also,
maybe
how do you know is. Those pictures are of him on a ventilator? He could have literally pulled up any picture. Now I don't trust this guy again.
Yeah, he had a, you know, no. I looked at his profile. It's definitely him. It's definitely him. But still, do you know what I mean? He's like, my friend's dying. Can you do something for my friend? That didn't work. And then he doubles down and goes, I'm dying. I'm like, oh, shit, this guy's dying. So anyway, listen, if you're dying,
maybe he was saying
help
that,
you.
Maybe he was saying that he was dying to go to UFC 241 and you misread the thing.
I do that. I do skim. So maybe I just saw dying. This woman skimmed out to go.
No, it's one
UFC.
Of her... It's one of her teammates, and they had a whole benefit, and this is real for sure. And then they hit me up, and she was "Hey, I mentioned it to you. I was like, can we get the?" And you were like, "Yeah, of course." But now I feel bad because it just reminded me, and this is months ago. I have no idea what's going on with this benefit. I have no idea that if somebody purchased these gloves, I have no idea what happened out there. But lady, you got to be on top of it because there's no way I'm going to remember in a million years. I have a billion things going on.
A billion.
A billion.
That's a lot of things. You got. Billion. Wow, you're a busy man.
I'm very
busy. Anyway. Enough of people dying. Enough of Ricky Gervais.
Well,
enough of Golden Globes.
Not enough of people dying. I wanted to ask you about the end of the world. Remember, we were going to talk about how we might not have another show? Yeah. Nuclear Holocaust?
Listen, I just want to say this first. We are not a political show. I'm in no shape or form to be discussing politics, okay? I'm a simple man. But we would be remiss if we didn't mention that it certainly appears that right now, America seems to be at war with Iran. Of course, that's not good. It seems though today I saw actually a Trump went and did a statement today saying he's trying to implore peace. He gave a statement today and said, listen, we're open to peaceful negotiations. So hopefully Iran does the same thing. But still, it could be World War III. It could be gone. It could be on, baby boy. I just hope that all those feminists that want gender equality, I hope they're running down the fucking Marines office right now to sign up. Send out the women. Send them out. You want equality? You ain't fucking sowing through this war, okay? There's your rifle. There you go. Don't be offended. It's a joke, but it's also true. It's also true. Fuck it. Frontline, send the women. I'm going to get my crocheting skills down to a T. I'm joking again. But yeah, World War III, baby. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea. I try not to pay attention. I try to live my life in a certain ignorance is bliss sort of manner, right? I feel like if I start to become obsessed with these things, even like the stupid, dumb Twitter fights we get into, all the politicized stuff, like I get myself into these things and I realize when I put my phone down and I just enjoy my life, I look at my fucking kid who I love, or I look at the incredible business I've built. I have a great apartment. I high five my assistant. All of my producers, I make them stand in a line and fucking, you know, smack each other on the butt.
Louis, we're talking about the potential of World War III. We didn't say sit here and list all your accolades and remind everybody how amazing your life is.
But that's what I'm saying. If I get offline, I'm not watching missiles drop anywhere. Like I'm just like, oh, here's a sandwich. Let me eat my sandwich. But when you,
go on. Sorry, I'll let you finish your point.
I was gonna say, when you jump on the internet, everything starts to fall apart, and everything seems worse than it is. And it used to be the TV. It used to be the news, which sort of sell you fear. And I just try not to start thinking about too many things that I don't have control over and that I don't really know too much about, because I feel like you sort of obsess with these things that you can't control. It's like obsessing over the cards when you're playing poker. It's like you can't control those cards. You got to play your cards, right? So that's sort of the way that I look at it. But it does seem it does seem pretty bad. But in my head, and just from an outside perspective, aren't we constantly dropping bombs everywhere? Aren't we constantly at war? Doesn't every president that we've ever had just get into a war right before re-election season comes up and everyone's afraid and everyone goes like, oh, my God. It just seems like it's all part of this game that has nothing to do with war or peace or anything else that we have any idea about.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, I'll just give my 2 cents. There's nothing I can do. There's nothing I can do about it. So I hear your point in what you say to a certain degree. I try not to get too concerned with it because there's nothing I can do to change it. You know what I mean? I'm not even an American citizen. You know what I mean? So I can't even vote here to, if I wanted to vote Trump out of power, or whatever, you know, at the next election, I couldn't even do that. So there's very, very little that I can do. However, burying your head in the sand and pretending that these things aren't going on, isn't the answer either. You know what I'm saying? Unfortunately, these things happen. Atrocities happen every day. And it seems like, you know, there's more troops being sent out there, you know, and it seems like this General Soleimani that they killed, by all accounts, was a bad man. But still, you can't go fucking bombing Iran. And by the way, sorry, I'm getting too political. I didn't mean that. What I meant was, you know, there's always reactions to actions and all of it. Every action has a reaction, okay? That's all I'm saying. I'm not
conceive,
fucking saying
that we should believe, achieve, shut the fuck
exactly.
up.
Exactly. Or shut the fuck up is the key part for me. All I'm saying is I don't want innocent people to die, but there's not a lot I can do about it, so I don't really concern myself with it too much. It's kind of like here's another thing, another tragedy that's happened in the world. The bloody wildfires in Australia. Do you know what I mean? Jesus Christ, we haven't talked about that. Have you seen what's going on out there, Lewis?
Yeah, I have. I've talked about it on some of the other podcasts pretty extensively. I've been covering the Australia wildfires for a few weeks now. And at first, when it was one koala bear on fire, I mean, we all made the jokes. We all laughed at that one.
What was the joke?
I'm kidding. It was all fun and games when it was one koala bear on fire. But here we are.
500 million. Okay, it's like maybe we need to step in about now.
You want to know how crazy? It's 500 million animals have been killed in Australia. You know what they started doing because they're running out of water to fight the fires? You know what they started doing? They started
shooting camels.
They started shooting camels from helicopters.
I saw on the news this morning that they're going to shoot 10,000 camels because they're drinking water and obviously they're in a massive drought right now. My response was, I turned to Rebecca, I'm having coffee in bed as I read that. I said, babe, do they have fucking camels in Australia? I had no idea they had camels in Australia, but apparently there's enough of them that they're going to shoot 10,000. I'm not sure that's the fucking answer either. I don't think shooting innocent camels going about the business. You know, the Harrington of the camel world is there. He's just minding his own business. He's doing a terrible job putting the notes together. Boom, yep. Slotted, bullet in the head. Don't see how that's going to stop the fire. Problem is, these other fires are going to join together soon and create mega fires, okay? Maybe the end of the world, Lewis, right? We've got World War III kicking off, Iran, USA, all the allies, that's kicking off. Australia's on fire. 500 million animals are dead, okay? It's the end of the world, Lewis.
That's it. I mean, what would you... All right, so let's say, hypothetically speaking, okay... Is that from space?
Look at Australia. Wow. For those people
that's
listening
Australia
on audio,
from space.
We're looking at a satellite image of Australia, and you can see the fires. I mean, it's so sad. It really is. I mean, the animals, the people, a lot of people have lost their lives. A lot of people have lost their homes. Imagine that shit. You know what I mean?
How many
we're
people
sitting
have died?
Here on a podcast. I think it might be over 1,000 people. I think it might be over 1,000 people have died. It's a lot of people. It really is. And not just that, all the homes. I think hundreds of thousands of homes have burnt. We're sitting there doing this podcast. Imagine coming back in your home, all your, you know, all the possessions, you know, like the material things, but like photographs, everything, just your life, all the artifacts that you've gathered throughout your life, just burnt, gone. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah. That would be horrible, dude. I mean, I don't know. I don't know much about Australian life, but I'm assuming that.
Well,
there's been a lot
I'll
of,
tell you this, Lewis.
A lot of burnt didgeridoos,
Australian life's pretty similar to life here. Human beings, they get up in the morning, they go to bed at night, they have 3 square meals a day. Maybe some of them have 6 if you're on the 30-day fast program. You know, they like to surf. They talk a little bit funny. They're very, very laid-back people. They're very nice people. It's a beautiful country. Life in Australia isn't dissimilar to life in California. So there you go. You know all about it, Lewis.
I am making some jokes. I apologize. These pictures are fucking horrible. I really feel bad. Did you see the one chick, though, that she was an Instagram model, like really hot chick, and she was like, for every person that shows me proof that they donated $10, I'll send them a customized nude picture. And then she raised like, how much money did she raise? It was crazy. It was like a few $100,000 in like a day.
Again, I can only think of the clerical nightmare that was.
$700,000 with nude photos before her account was deleted by Instagram, which is fucked up. Instagram, don't delete her account. Who cares?
No. Put her back on. I need to just take a good look at her again. Okay. Naked philanthropist Kaylin Ward inspires other sex workers to offer photos in exchange for donations to bushfire relief. She's got beautiful lips on her.
Yeah, she does.
Anyway, sorry, I got a little distracted. Where were we?
How would you feel? Would you be upset if your wife or daughter offered that to the world and raised $700,000 by offering nude photos?
Why you could ask me that? Why have you got to put my wife and my daughter in a sentence involving nude photos on Instagram? Okay, Jesus Christ, Ricky Bobby, don't put that evil on me. Come on, Lewis, fuck it up. How would I feel? How would you feel if James out there exposed himself on Instagram to stop the fires? How would you feel?
Okay, fucking Jeffrey Epstein over here. He's a baby boy. He's a baby boy.
That's okay, because he's a boy. Listen, I don't care what you want. Men is one thing, women is another. My daughter will not be revealing herself on Instagram. Bushfires or no bushfires, okay?
What if, hold on.
There's a joke with bushfire there.
there's a lot of jokes with bushfire. All right, all you have to do is forget it. Let's move on. Because we always take it to that line, and then we go, you know what? We got to edit that part out. I'm going to lose my family for this podcast. It's not worth it.
Yeah, listen, I got some good meetings this week. I got a couple of big things in the pipeline. Do you know what I mean? You know, I won't go into details, but could be a very good year this year. I don't want them to hear this episode. So, you know what? We're going to get Bisping out of here. Enough nonsense.
That Instagram model's got a few things in her pipeline, too, if you know what I mean.
I think out of my love for Australia, I got to give her a follow, though. What's her name? Kaylin Ward.
She's hot, dude. Look at her. Fuck yes, Kaylin.
Kaylin Ward. Let's see how many followers she's got.
Just to support Australia, obviously.
Kaylin Ward official, 49,000. Can't be. This is the thing with Instagram.
I think Instagram should have... No, they deleted her account, so now maybe she has a new one that she just started up again. But I think Instagram should have, you know, and that if you're doing something like that, right, and you're not posting the pictures publicly, what does it matter? I don't know. I don't really understand why they would sort of put a stop to that, especially if she's raised $700,000 for a legitimately good cause. There is a person there that can go, you know what? Fuck it. Let it go. Who cares?
Yeah, but here's the thing. I mean, that all sounds well and good, you know, but unfortunately, you know, this is the thing with charities. A lot of charity doesn't actually go to the cause in question. You know what I mean? With clerical... there she is. Oh, Kaylin. Again, forget what I was saying. Let's just take a look. She's a good woman.
She's
a very good woman. She's got a heart of gold. Do you know what I mean? Nice tattoo on her left leg.
Something about her chest is great. I don't know. Heart of gold.
I just get a really good feeling about her when I look at her. Like her aura that she's giving off.
Yeah, she does give
good giving.
She gives great aura.
Oh God! What was I saying? Yeah, charities. A lot of it goes on salaries. We're non-profit, but the CEO's salary is $2 million a year.
I got a problem with that.
You got to be a little careful.
That's the photo she gave out. By the way, look at her. Look at the photo.
Oh my God! We have a black box over what would appear to be her black box. But it's a good shot.
I don't necessarily have a problem with the paying of CEOs a lot of money. All right, so this is Hold on.
For a non-profit charity organization, you have no problem if the guy that is running that is on, let's say, $2 million a year.
And I'll tell you why. And I will convince you at the end of this that I'm right. Okay?
Go ahead.
Because you said it before, baby, cash is king. Money rules the world, okay? And I want somebody at the helm of my business, even if it's a nonprofit, it's a business that knows how to make fucking money. I would rather bring the CEO from some Fortune 500 company in that knows how to turn a company and increase profits by 100% versus somebody that's like, you know what, I really believe in the good of the world and I'm not going to take a salary because I just want to... That person, they're not going to kill it.
You're absolutely right. Of course, you want any business to be ran successfully and you get what you pay for in this world. But a lot of the time when you see non-profit, that's very misleading. And yes, the company doesn't make a profit, but they're just taking massive salaries, massive bonuses. You've always got to be careful, right? Listen, there's a lot of charities out there that do tremendous amount of good, you know what I mean? And I applaud all of them and I try and give to as many as possible. We're donating to the fires. It won't be anything stupid, but every little bit helps. You know, I'll give a few hundred dollars towards the fires. You know, and I donate to charities all the time, but there is a lot of them, a lot of these non-profits. I'm a little hesitant, you know what I mean? Because by the time it goes through the chain, by the time the tax man takes their cut, well, it's probably no tax because you're charity, but by the time it goes through all these different avenues, probably a very, very small part goes to the charity in question. So I'm not saying don't donate. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying go out there, donate, be generous, help people, help the fires, help anyone that needs it. But just be wise about who you're donating to. Anyway, right, well, fuck that, enough. Enough. I keep go on then. Last part. I'm trying to get into some hard hitting mixed martial arts topics, some debate. There's a lot of shit going on. UFC 246 is around the corner. We got a massive article that we're going to break down. Okay. But you're fine. Make your final point.
Well, I was going to say there are lists of good charities to donate to and bad charities to donate to for specifically that reason. I just don't know that the how much the CEO is getting paid is necessarily the parameter you should look at or the yes. figure you should look at. But these are some bad ones. They say, is your favorite charity on this list? These are the 10 worst charities to donate to last year, which is the Kids Wish Network, the Children's Wish Foundation International, Firefighters Charitable Foundation. You had 90 cents of every dollar goes to for-profit solicitors, International Union of Police Associations, Breast Cancer Relief Foundation, American Association of State Troopers, and yeah, a bunch more. Children's Cancer Fund.
Yeah.
There's a bunch.
Because the reason I'm a little skeptical is because when I used to work as a door-to-door salesman back in the day, I remember, I forget the name of the charity now, but there was one, what we were doing, we were, you know, our subject, if you will, would change now and again. And then all of a sudden we were trying to sell, trying to get people to donate to this charity. We'd knock on the door and say, hey, you know, do you want to donate to XYZ? But if we got them to donate, you know, let's say it was £50, fucking £40 of that went in my pocket.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was like, well, how does that make sense? And they would say, well, the thing is, these charities, they get massive grants from the government and they have to spend that money every year. And if they don't spend that money, they don't get the grant next year. So it's just a totally fucked up system. How about you just take the money, what you need, do the good with it. And if there's any surplus left over, then great. That can roll into next year or go to something else. But it's these guidelines and other bureaucracy that just kind of, you know, and that made me a little skeptical. You know, the fact that I'm trying to get people to donate to charity, but some of it goes in my pocket. By the way, didn't do it for very long. Did it for about 2 weeks. There you go. Before you'll start giving me shit, go fuck yourself. But you see what I'm saying? But yeah. All right. Okay. Boom. Athletic.
I got nothing else. I got nothing else on it.
I got nothing. I got nothing. I have no authority to be talking about charities because I know very little. Very, very little.
All right. Let's just take a quick second and talk about Native Deodorant, which is such an incredible company. I switched to Native Deodorant. I don't use any other deodorant now, okay, because it is really the best smelling. It's forget all the other stuff. Obviously, it's natural and it's made with natural ingredients and it's great for your body and healthy, but it literally smells better than any other deodorant that I've ever used in my entire life.
Are you saying that you are a big fan of the coconut and vanilla? I mean, because that's the one that I like. The lavender and the rose. I mean, Jesus Christ, I get compliments on that one all the time. But I tell you what is the best. Maybe the best ever. The mint eucalyptus.
Yes. That's the one, baby boy. I'm telling you right now, what I do is when I try to get women now, what I do is I just put my arm up on a doorway and I just kind of let my pheromones just breathe off my body and go into their nose and I just watch them light up.
Well, they do. They look at you and they say, Jesus Christ, is that mint combined with eucalyptus? And you say, yes, and you get talking. And then they say, oh, my God, are you using Native Deodorant? Do you know that has no aluminium in it or aluminum, however you guys like to say it? And you say, well, yes, but I'm not sure what that does. And the significant other in this conversation would say, well, basically, if there's no aluminium, it won't form a plug in your sweat gland and it won't stop you from sweating. Yikes. Native deodorant is made without aluminum, so you can feel better about what you put on your body, Lewis.
And then you know what they usually say to me? They're like, all right, but it's obviously got a lot of parabens and talc in it.
No, definitely not. But when they do say that, what do you say?
I say no parabens, no talc. It's also vegan and never tested on animals.
Yeah, and then I say, and by the way, Native comes in a wide variety of options for men, women, and even teens. Yeah, that's right. They got the teens covered. They also offer unscented options and a baking soda free formula for those with sensitivities. Now, listen, we're sitting here, we're talking about deodorant on a podcast. You want to try it, but you're like, I don't want to take the risk. Well, guess what? No risk to try. Free shipping on every single order, and Native offers 30-day free returns and exchanges inside the USA. I didn't say wow. UFC, the USA. Anyway, still not convinced? Well, all you got to do is check out the 9,000 five-star reviews from happy customers who made the switch to Native. Listen, do me a favor. Give it a try. We got a great offer for you. Support the show. Don't smell out the place. You're going to buy some deodorant. Don't go down to Ralph's. Don't go down to CVS. Don't go down to Boots for the internationals, okay? Just support our show. Try Native. You will like it. No parabens, no aluminium, no stuffs that we said earlier. You know what I'm saying, Lewis? Talc. No talc. I mean, that keeps me up at night.
Talc on this show, and so do you, and that's why you listen to this show, likely. If you go to nativedeodorant.com right now, nativedeodorant.com, nativedeodorant.com, and use the promo code BELIEVE during checkout, we are going to save you 20% off your first purchase. That's with free shipping, free returns if you don't like it, 20% off. You got nothing to lose, okay? It's going to be less expensive than the normal deodorant you're buying, healthier for the earth, healthier for your body, and you're going to smell better. What is not to love about this?
What more do you want? You get to support our show. Listen, I live in a half mansion, right? I got to keep the money coming in. Simple as that. Lewis has a full department of sycophants and assistants to support. So support the show, support us, and support your armpits without talc, parabens, and aluminium. You know what I'm saying? Go to nativedeodorant.com and use the promo code, Lewis. What was the promo code?
Believe, Eve, Eve, Eve.
Believe, 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 believe.
20%.
All right. What the hell were we talking about? Where were we? Mixed martial arts. Where shall we start?
Let's talk about this Athletic article, because I thought it was kind of interesting. And we did just spend a lot of the last show talking about diet, exercise, getting back into shape. And I thought it kind of related.
Yeah, well, it really did. There's this Athletic article called Broken Bodies, How the UFC Performance Institute is Fixing What Extreme Weight Cutting Destroyed. Basically, it goes into, and if you read it, it is actually very informative and some very, very interesting points that they make. And I was saying this for the longest time, you know, MMA fighters, unfortunately, were in this trap. We were stuck in this vicious cycle where everybody... I say everybody, the majority of fighters aren't competing at their natural weight class, right? And it's kind of a, if you can't beat them, join them mentality, or you're doing what the, you know, you're following the herd. Everybody cuts 15 pounds, so therefore you get to the UFC, you cut 15 pounds. I remember when I was in England, I used to fight at light heavyweight. And even in the UFC, I think my first five fights or so, and on the Ultimate Fighter, were at light heavyweight. But everyone said, no, eventually you're going to have to go down to 185. And then, you know, I lost to Rashad Evans, a highly contentious split decision. But whatever, I'm like, okay, you know, I'm not making all the sacrifices possibly to be the best version I can be. So I dropped down to 185. And this story goes into saying how basically all these fighters are doing this. And there's one in particular, Macy Barber, a young up-and-coming girl. I think she's still undefeated. She's talking. And Michael Chiesa is another guy. He's at 170 now. He used to fight at 155. I'm not sure Michael Chiesa's weight. I think he's like 6'3", and he's fighting at 155. And in this article, I'm just trying to find the point of it now. He was saying that they looked at his frame, they looked at his muscle mass, they looked at his BMI and his the amount of fat that he's carrying on there. And they said that the lightest he could get to without perhaps having to go into a medical emergency was 158 pounds. But he's consistently making weight at 155 or 156, you know, and it's just so detrimental to your performance. And then I think Macy Barber was saying she was on a 500 to 800 calories per day diet whilst in a training camp to try and make weight. It's so detrimental to your performance and to the product that you're going to give. Because if you're in there, you're malnourished, you're weak, you're under-muscled, you know, and you're just drained and overtrained, you know, then the viewer, the consumer, isn't getting the best fight possible. So if everybody just moved up a weight class, then, you know, I think we're going to see a better product. I think we're going to have a healthier sport, a safer sport, perhaps less knockouts. That's what I was saying. This thing with Donald Cerrone and Conor next week, the fight that it's at 170, I think that plays in Cowboy's favor, or is that's advantageous to Cowboy. Not saying it's in his favor, not saying he's going to win. I'm saying, but that's definitely a tick in the boxes for Cerrone because it's at 170. The heavier you are, the better you can take a punch and the stronger you're going to be.
Yeah, I know that. I guess Joanna and Jacek gave credit to this gentleman, Clint Wattenberg, for being like a guru and a genius. And the Performance Institute seems to have embraced this. Very smart. I've always said the UFC has been very smart to sort of stay ahead of the curve on certain things. We've talked about it in the past with the social media stuff. And they were years ago giving bonuses for guys to get on social media and to get creative and to grow their brands. And now they seem to be recognizing that the weight cutting is a major issue in the sport, and they want to fix it on like a fundamental level, which is incredible. I was reading that they're giving free meals designed to optimize your muscle mass and performance on fight night. They're giving nutritional counseling all throughout the year. So you can go to the Performance Institute at any time and sort of give that personalized attention, which is pretty damn amazing.
No, it really is. And the fighters these days, they don't know how lucky they have it, because back in the day, it was the Wild West, really. You know, you'd have some like so-called nutritionist that didn't really know what he was doing. You know, it always like a copy and paste diet every time. It wasn't formulated to the individual needs of that fighter. They weren't looking at the weight they were then and the weight they need to be in 6 weeks' time. They were just like, here's what you need to eat as a fighter. Boom, there you go. 6 ounces of lean meat, 3 ounces of vegetables and 6 grams of carbs or whatever it is. I know those ratios are all off, but you know what I mean? They would just copy and paste these diets and expect that to work for everybody. And you're talking about the meals there. That's trifecta meals. And that's the thing that Joanna Jędrzejczyk talks about there. She says our one nutritionist, you'll have to read the article to get the name. I'm not going to badmouth somebody, but she says this nutritionist for her fight against Who beat Joanna for the title? Oh, Nama Yunus. When Nama Yunus beat her, she had to pay this dietitian $6,000. But then the next fight, when she wasn't the champ, she had to pay $1,200. And she's like, well, what's the difference? And he's like, well, you were a champion then. And at the point is, well, nothing's fucking changed, though. You're still giving me the same food. You know, you're still giving me the same food. What are you sending me? Fucking caviar from Russia? You know, the thing is, you know, because she was the champion, they were kind of milking that situation and asking for more money. So now with the UFC, like for me, towards the end, I was very happy. I had this guy, Chef Ipono Meals, you know, a delivery system every Monday. On a Monday morning, they deliver it at the door and I fill my fridge, and it took all the guesswork out of it. It was nice food. It was delicious.
3 meals a day?
Good for you. No, it was like 4 or 5 meals per day.
Oh, but you know? Everything but you ingested was from that specific thing? Because I'm thinking about doing that now in New York, because it's too much. When I'm left to my own devices, I mean, I will just fuck up every...
The meal delivery thing is really, really good. I mean, because as I say, I was using Ipono meals. Now with the UFC, they use Trifecta meals, okay, which incidentally is owned by Uriah Faber. God bless Uriah Faber. He's a hustler, man. He's a hustler. And you even see Trifecta on the pillars of the octagon here and there. So he's a hustler. But I remember the George St. Pierre fight, for example. You know, my meals, because like the week of the fight, that's the hardest part. You know, if like me, you're trying to cut 15 pounds on that final week, but then you fly to wherever the destination is. Predominantly, you're at the mercy of restaurants. And I remember going into a restaurant, looking at the menu, and then the waiter comes over, and this is where cash is king, because they might say no. And I say, well, there's fucking a 20, motherfucker. Give me the meal that I want. I say, listen, do me a favor. Can I just get a chicken breast with some vegetables and maybe a little bit of rice on the side? And they say, yeah, no problem. I think we can do that. And I'd say, but I need no salt, please. It's imperative that there is no salt. Obviously, salt makes you retain water. In that week, you're trying to shift 15 pounds of water. And they would say, well, I'll try. And I'm like, no, please, please. I would lie. I'd say, I'm allergic to salt. And they say, well, we don't think people could be allergic to salt. I said, no, I have a rare medical condition. Okay, I'm allergic to salt. If you put salt in my food, I'm going to have a bad reaction.
By the way, Side note, like with that, because I've done the same thing where I've said I was allergic to sugar in the past, where I'm like, yeah, because I'm would've been, like, crazy on keto. And then I get myself angry. Like, if I find out that there's some sugar in it or something, I start getting myself worked up like I'm actually allergic to it. Like, they're actually trying to hurt my life. Even though it's not true, none of it's true, I'll still get myself that type of angry. But a little side note, that's the type of crazy that I am.
Yeah. I know, I was going to say it's called being a psycho, and I do similar things myself. That's why we do this show. But I remember I took the meals. You know, I put them in my suitcase with some like ice packs, whatever, to keep them cool. Obviously, on a plane, once you get up to altitude, it's very cold anyway. And then I take them out and I put them in the fridge in my room. And you know, whilst they were delicious, by the time you've flown them to New York and you're on you're on the fourth day of the week, you know, you're getting them out. You got your dry chicken and whatnot. Now, these guys, they're getting fucking fresh meals delivered every day. You know, they don't know how lucky they have it. They really don't. They got the UFC Performance Institute at their fingertips. Heather, she's like the head of rehab and recovery and all that type of stuff. She's a fucking genius. You know, it's a tremendous place. And you're seeing now, I forget the percentages right now, but the amount of people that are missing weight compared to in the past is massively reduced.
Yeah, I just went on to trifectanutrition.com just now, and I'm chatting with one of their customer service representatives to find out if they deliver in New York, and they do. I might try this out.
Are you serious?
I swear to God, I just was to see. And she's chatting with me, and I was like, do you deliver in New York? She's like, yes, we do.
What is she saying right now?
They just no PO boxes nationwide. How it works. I'm excited. I just need meals in my fridge.
Ask her what she's wearing and see what the response is. Also, say, what are you wearing?
Yeah, we work with UFC and UFC Performance Institute. Well, I already told them I'm on my podcast with Michael Bisping, so are you sure you want me to ask this?
Don't say that. No wonder I'm about to get offensive. Oh, Jesus Christ. No, I've got sweaty armpits right now. Just came in from the gym. All right, well, don't say that. Don't say that at all, okay? Having a laugh. So anyway, you know, I mean, it seems like, fortunately, you know, the sport's going to get safer. That's the be-all and end-all, you know. Weight cuts, these extreme weight cuts, they're going to be a thing of the past. I hope so. They should do. I've said time and time again, you know, they should just not force, because you can't force people at what weight class, but everyone should just move up a weight class. They should introduce a cruiserweight, you know, a 205, put in a 220 or 225, 220, I'd say, 220-pound weight class, and then after that, you got heavyweight, a 265. I think that's what they should do, but you know, everyone's got an opinion, Lewis. What are you doing there? What are you chatting? What are you saying? Well, great podcasting. You're not even fucking paying attention.
I am, but I'm very excited about this trifecta meal plan for just $108 a week.
This is not an ad read, okay? I want some of that $180 a month. What's on the menu? What do they
have? It's pretty good, dude. It's not bad. Well, it's only one meal a day.
Hey, Mike O'Hearn. He won't be happy at this. We're doing his program. He has his icon meals, okay? And you're gonna the very next show after he provided us with his insight. He came on the show, and now you're gonna talk up one of his competitors.
Will he deliver to my house? Will he deliver me meals?
I don't know. Maybe. Yes. He will, and at a faster rate than Trifecta.
And he personally does it. He shows up on a bike.
No, he flies there. He's Superman. He flies there with his cables and does your meals. Trifecta are great. And well done to Uri Faber for that. God bless.
So, Mike, what's interesting, the story that we're talking about is featured in The Athletic, which is one of our brand new, really incredible sponsors. I love the fact that The Athletic has come onto the show because we've been talking about their articles for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, if you want a good, you know, a well-written article with no clickbait, no ads, none of that jargon that you see, you know, on a lot of MMA websites or sports websites in particular, then you got to check out The Athletic. I mean, as you said, this story that we're talking about, it goes in there. It's very in-depth. A lot of actual very, very useful information that I'm going to steal and use as my own when I commentate the Rafael Dos Anjos versus Michael Chiesa fight. So thank you to The Athletic for that. And if you want to try it, just download The Athletic app, pick your favorite sports and teams. The Athletic will begin servicing all the latest on the athletes and the stories that matter to you. And if you're ready to get started, get 40% off a yearly subscription by going to theathletic.com/believe. Make sure that's all lowercase. And yeah, I mean, there you go. I mean, what more do you want? Stories with substance, quality, in-depth content that goes beyond the box score. And exclusive the app is- content. Smart analysis, sis. Advanced analytics, ticks. In-depth analysis, insight, smart coverage, unique content, original content. Lewis, now you can interrupt me. Go.
Well, I'll tell you right now, the fact that they customize everything is perfect because I'm not a big sports fan, so I only want to hear about certain things, certain teams, certain fighters. So it's not like you download an app for another, you know, blog or whatever, and then you get all this information. It's just, it's useless. This is a great app. Makes it super convenient. No pop-ups, no clickbait, no nothing. TheAthletic.com. Pretty incredible. Plus, we're saving you 40% right now. If you guys go to theathletic.com/believe, you're saving 40% off your entire subscription for the year. So go do that. Support the show. Support The Athletic. All right. Where were we?
I'll tell you what they did talk about in Raleigh, North Carolina, in that Athletic article there. Rafael Dos Anjos, co-main event, taking on Michael Chiesa. What's the main event for that? Oh, Junior Dos Santos taking on Curtis Blaydes. That's going to be a great fight card. Obviously, we've got the Conor 246 next week. Week after, we're back in Raleigh. So, you know, the consecutive fight nights are starting to pick up momentum. We're going to be UFC London in March. Tyrone Woodley versus Leon Edwards. I'm not sure if that fight is finalized. Harrington, is that fight, you know, has that been announced, so to speak?
As far as I know, it's still rumblings. I'll double check right now.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a break, it felt like. Usually we don't get that much time off in between fights.
Yeah, but it's been about 5 weeks, which is nice because it does, as we said on the last show, kind of develops that thirst. And that's why there's a little bit of dead air here and there. We're like, okay, maybe on ones like this, we need a guest. But I'll tell you what has been booked, and I'm looking at it right now, and this is worth mentioning, Israel Adesanya taking on the soldier of God, Yoel Romero. Adesanya said, the fight is done. I literally just got to the gym now. I'm about to get some work in. Make no mistake, I'm still putting in the work. I'm still getting ready for my second title defense against a veteran in the game. A veteran in the wrestling, a tough motherfucker, the bogeyman of the division, the guy no one calls out except Stylebender. The fight will happen, and it will happen on our terms as well. I'm happy. I have no doubt that I'm going to get what I want out of this fight. Okay. A few things there. The third person shit's got to stop, and it's not your second time. I love Israel. He's awesome. I hung out with him at the fight recently. Great guy. A lot of fun. Fantastic fighter. Unbelievable. But it ain't your second title defense. You won the interim. I get it. Listen, in his mind, he had a belt put around his waist. I get it. And fair play. And I'm just having fun for the sake of it. But in my mind, and we always said this, the interim title fight is solidifying you yourself as the number one contender. But whatever. That's neither here or there. I'm being a picky little asshole there. What do you think of the fight, Lewis? It's going to be a good one.
It's going to be a great fight. Yeah, look, Yoel's a monster. And it's just, no matter what, you put him across from anybody, it's just, he has that factor. He can knock you out. He can out-wrestle you. It's a scary fight for anyone. You know, Adesanya, he has this belief in himself that, you know, it reminds me of John Jones. He believes that he's sort of like above everybody else. And I think in order to reach that level of greatness, you sort of have to have that level of belief in yourself. So I know it's douchey when he talks about himself in third person. And I know it's douchey when he sort of has this like air of like, well, I am fucking, you know, but
I was joking.
I know you hate him. Look, it's fine. You don't like Israel Adesanya. You know,
he's got my title. No, I think the guy's fucking awesome. I'm just looking at Yoel Romero's record. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go
no,
ahead.
Not at all. But I'm just saying, like, I give certain guys, I give them a little bit of a break, especially in a fight like a sport like fighting, where it's like, yeah, almost like, it, dude, the mind-body connection, that belief in your ability, that is the difference sometimes when it is a game of centimeters, when it's like anybody can get knocked out, anybody could win when fighters are so closely stacked, that might be all the difference in the world, is sort of believing that you're above every other human being and you have this direct relationship with God. So whereas I think it sucks, I would never sort of say those things, and it's cringy for me. I give certain guys a pass, including Israel, John Jones, all these guys that sort of like, you know, they do that thing.
Well, you have to. In this game, if you're not out there speaking like that, now, of course, not everybody does, but A lot of legendary fighters do, because you have to believe that you are the best. You're stepping in there to into an octagon with a physical specimen, a man that can match you more, you know, 9 times out of 10 can match you physically. You know, inside the top five of any weight class, there isn't that much difference. You know what I mean? They're all fast. They all got good jiu-jitsu. They all hit hard. They're all fucking tough motherfuckers. They're all probably guys you wouldn't want to mess with on the street. You know what I mean? But the true elite, the best guys, they've got this. This is what separates them. You know, I mean, look at Muhammad Ali, you know, lauded as the best ever. He went out there, he talked shit, he bigged himself up, because you have to. The moment you think that you're not going to win, you've already lost the fight. You can't allow yourself to think that. So sometimes when you're doing that, it's an exercise in your own self-belief.
And sometimes you want to just go. You want to just go for it sometimes. And the guys that really believe themselves, they're just going to go for it. It reminds me of this morning. I was playing Fortnite and, you know, I was being very tentative.
Same exact thing.
In the beginning. But then at one point, something snapped into me. And I was like, you know what, dude? I'm above these motherfuckers. God told me that I'm going to win this game. And sure enough, 9-kill victory, victory royale, did the whole fucking dance at the end. It was amazing.
I mean, that's impressive. That's impressive. I want to see you do the dance. Do the dance.
I can do it.
Can you do the dance? Do the dance. And I don't mean the floss. I don't mean the floss.
That's the floss. That's the one.
No, that one where they like.
Wait, which one? Oh, I can do it. I know what you're talking about.
That one. Not the floss. Any man and the dog can floss. Alfie, come here. Floss.
Floss.
Alfie's flossing over there like a maniac. Anyone can floss. Flossing isn't easy. I mean, hard. Listen, we're not flossing. We're not dossing. Listen, here's the thing. The mind controls everything. Sit your ass down, Louis J. You just wanted to floss so bad. You were dying for me to ask you to floss. No. Listen, when you're that physically close, the mind separates everything. You know, the mind controls everything, to quote Jason Perillo. But Yoel Romero, you know, you could be forgiven for being a little skeptical of this fight at first, because I'm looking at his record right now. He's lost 3 of his last 4, but there's more to it than that, to be honest. 2 of those losses were to Robert Whittaker, who Adesanya just took out very, very easily. But they were great fights. And then his last loss was to Paulo Costa, which again, he lost by unanimous decision, very close fight, extremely entertaining fight, and Costa's out. Costa is out. It's as simple as that. It's like when I went into the cage and challenged Robert Whittaker. Whittaker got injured and Yoel got injured. So that was that. You know, the fight never materialized. Costa's out. That means the next man in line is Yoel Romero. So by default, and when I say default, I don't mean that as a negative. It just is. That's the way it is. The first man in line is Paulo Costa. He's injured. Who we got next? Well, Yoel Romero's right there. It was a close fight with Costa. Costa won, but it was close. It was entertaining. And everybody knows Yoel is a bad motherfucker. Right, and stylistically, it could cause some problems for Adesanya. Now, the thing is, Yoel, he's not spring chicken. I'm just trying to look at his age here. I think he's 42.
Yeah.
And April 30th, he'll be 43. So he's definitely getting on. He's had a lot of fights. His record is 13-4. So he's had 17 fights, not too many fights, but a long wrestling career. Wrestling is very, very, you know, grueling on the body, lots of injuries. It's hard. It's a tough way to forge a career, that's for sure. So listen, you know, it's fair to say that Yoel, this is going to be the last title fight he's ever going to get, right? And he probably knows that. His manager knows it. His camp, his trainers, his coaches will all know. I mean, come on, for crying out loud. Fought Robert Whittaker for the belt. Fought Luke Rockhold for an interim belt. Fought Robert Whittaker for the belt. And then for Paulo Costa, he's had 3 title fights out of his last 4. Do you know what I mean? He's getting another one, as I just said, for good reason. But if he doesn't win this, I don't think he'll ever sniff another title fight. So I think, you know, I mean, he seems like the type of guy that's always going to bring everything. But Adesanya, whilst being confident, and rightly so, and whilst being electric in all his performances, and certainly a man to watch for a future legend, he's got to be careful, because Yoel does have that ability. One shot, bang, can put you to sleep. And the biggest danger, and I'll let you jump in now, biggest danger for Adesanya is this. It's what GSP got me with. I was so obsessed with the takedown against George St. Pierre. He fainted the takedown. I brought my hands down low to defend the takedown, and he came up with a left hook. Granted, to my bad side. We all know I don't see out of that side. So, you know, I mean, basically, it was like punching a blind man.
He cheated.
You know, but He definitely cheated. We don't like to talk about it, but I don't want to
taint the legacy of George St. Pierre, but he's a fucking cheat. But that's neither here nor there. It's not a big deal.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, Yoel also has the ability to stop the fight at any moment in the fight. We've watched him have a few late stoppages, I think third round stoppages, even championship round stoppages, where he just comes in and he's just explosive power throughout. I think Adesanya probably beats him in this fight, to be honest with you. But fuck, man, it could happen. Could easily happen. It's not the crazy thing. I didn't realize how old Yoel was, and I didn't realize how little fights he had. Those were two surprising things that I just looked at, that he's going to be 43, and he has only had 17 fights. What was he doing all these years?
Wrestling in Cuba. Do you know what I mean? He was living a hard life. You know, he was wrestling internationally. If you look at his Wikipedia page, Yoel Romero, which I just was. Hold on, let's have a look. I mean, Jesus Christ. Is that wrestling accolades, 2000, silver medal at the Sydney Olympic Games, World Championships, multiple golds, Wrestling World Cup, lots of golds, Pan American gold, bronze, Pan American gold. I mean, the guy's just been wrestling his
started
entire
his
life,
MMA right? career so, at 32 years old. That's fucking crazy. That is very old to start an MMA career.
It's actually very inspirational as well. You know, talking of Instagram earlier, like we were, I get a lot of people messaging me saying, listen, I'm in my mid-20s. Is it too late? I'm like, no. I mean, I had a background in martial arts, but I didn't have my first MMA fight till I think I was 24, something like that. Yeah, so anyway, listen.
If you're an Olympic caliber, if you're an Olympic caliber martial artist, you could probably make that transition to MMA at really any given point, to be honest.
Definitely. If you look after your body and you've got that. Listen, Adesanya understands reach, okay? He knows how to use, he's got a reach advantage on most people. He knows how to use it, much like John Jones. Him and John Jones are going back and forth all the time, but they're very, very similar versions. All right, Jones is a very good wrestler as well. Adesanya's a kickboxer, but you see the comparisons that I'm making. He understands reach. Yoel's going to have a tough time. Yoel's the older man. Yoel's got a lot of miles on the clock. He's been through a lot of wars, much like Robert Whittaker. I'm not taking away from Adesanya's win over Robert, but wars take their toll on you. You know what I mean? Like we were talking on the last show, at what point do you think, you know, I hit my peak, but then I started to decline. You know what I mean? The more wars you have, like that war I had with Anderson Silva, do you know what I mean? That takes a toll. Nothing is free. You know, if you go out there as a fighter and you're going through war after war after war, it's going to limit your career. There is outliers to that. People like fucking Diego Sanchez, who's been fighting in the UFC with the most reckless style you could ever imagine for the longest time possible. Do you know what I mean? That guy's an anomaly. That isn't generally how it goes. And if you look at Robert Whittaker, he had those two wars against Yoel Romero, and I don't think he looked that good against Stylebender. Now, of course, Stylebender was on the money. He looked fantastic, and it was a beautiful knockout. As I say, not detracting from his performance. But on the flip side, Yoel Romero as well. The wars that he had with Robert Whittaker, I think they may play a factor. And he had another war against Paulo Costa. That was a fucking hell of a fight. So all these wars, the fact that he's 43, the fact he's the shorter guy, and the fact that Adesanya is really finding his stride right now. Yeah, I got Adesanya winning that fight.
I think Bisping said it best.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Thanks,
and
Dana.
There's, I mean, Adesanya and Jones are really talking a lot of shit online with each other as well. That fight is.
You got any quotes?
Yeah, it's a foregone conclusion at this point. Yeah, Harrington, pull up. I have some right here, but they've been talking shit for a little while on each other at one point. John Jones fires back at his Israel's Adesanya. Yeah, this is from a little while ago. So, yeah, I know that. I guess Adesanya delayed the John Jones quote-unquote super fight up until 2021. He wants to put in some more work at middleweight before moving up to challenge Jones. But yeah, that fight, it's basically a foregone conclusion at this point. It's been sort of set up. The shit-talking is sort of in the air, and it keeps on coming out. And the only way it's not a foregone conclusion is if Israel Adesanya loses. If he loses, and by the way, there are guys that are in this division. I mean, he is the newly minted 185-pound champion. He might not get past Romero. If that happens, you're never going to watch Israel versus John Jones.
Well, I got two things to say to that. Number one, Remember back in 2016, the future of the middleweight division was Luke Rockhold. He was just steamrolling through everyone. The way he took out Lyoto Machida was a thing of beauty. He followed it up with just a complete decimation, a destruction of then-champion Chris Weidman. But on his first proper title defense, got knocked the fuck out cold by left hook Larry. That could happen. Me too, Brendan. Me too. Also, here's another factor why the John Jones fight might not happen. John Jones has been a light heavyweight forever, and he's taken out fucking everybody. And he did show interest in a fight with Stipe Miocic, you know. So John Jones, being the size that he is, you know, a natural progression for him towards the end of his career as he starts getting older. You know, he doesn't want to make that weight cut. See earlier conversation that we had would be to move up to heavyweight. You know, because listen, he's fighting Dominic Reyes. Once he's beat Dominic Reyes, who else has John Jones got left to beat? He's beating everybody. He might as well go up to heavyweight, you know, have a few more fights, some massive fights at heavyweight, and then call it a day. So if he does that, I doubt a fight with Adesanya would materialize. So there is still a few potential hiccups along the way.
But I can see Jones fighting at heavyweight the same way that like Dan Henderson fought at heavyweight, where he would just come in and be his weight. It's not like he would bulk up and become this fight massive. No, but Henderson did fight at heavyweight. He fought Fedor at heavyweight. Remember, he weighed like 207 pounds or something. Like, he didn't give a shit. Like,
TRT Hendo. I was made aware of that when we fought the first time. Yeah.
But I feel like even if John Jones did go up and fight Stipe, I don't think he'd like bulk and put on this massive weight. I think he'd probably just walk around 230, whatever he walks around at, and fight at that weight. And pretty much if the challenge presented itself at 205 in Israel Adesanya, those guys come and meet at a super fight at 205. Even if there's another 205-pound champion at that point, that's an incredible fight to see happen. That's honestly one of the only super fights that are out there right now that I'm like super, super interested in seeing. I don't know if there's many other like actual quote-unquote super fights, champion versus champion, or two guys that are coming from different divisions that I'm going like, oh my God, that's something that I have to see. But that's a super interesting fight. I think John Jones probably can, you know, manhandle Israel Adesanya. He's probably debatably as good of a striker and a way bigger, better wrestler. But at the very least, man, what an exciting fight on paper.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. When you look at it like that, the way you just said it, that does leave scope for that fight to still happen. And you're right. I mean, come on. Who wouldn't want to see that? Jones versus him, Adesanya, after all the shit talk. I mean, you got to give it to Adesanya. You know what I mean? Right, you got to give him some credit because he came out here, took it by storm, and now he's shit talking the baddest motherfucker in the UFC. And he's not just shit talking, he's going for the fucking jugular. Do you know what I mean? Constantly. Now, here's the thing, they're in different weight classes, and it's easy to do that. Now, I'm not saying that that's what he's doing, because it's easy to shit talk someone in another division thinking the fight's never going to happen. But I think he actually does want the fight. You know what I mean? If you thought the fight was never going to happen, you can talk shit. You get that free pass, but you get the credit from all the fans going, wow, he wants to fight him, but knowing deep down the fight's never going to happen. But I believe he does actually want to fight him, which, you know, kudos to him. But, you know, John Jones, he's the baddest motherfucker in the UFC for a reason. Super fights. Well, Jones versus Stipe, I'd like to see that one. I want to see DC versus Stipe 3, of course. That aside, Jones versus Stipe, I want to see that. Ooh, who's 170? Kamaru versus... I don't know. I'm sick of all this talk of super fights, if I'm honest. Yeah. You know, I want to see the champions defending the belts, all this jumping around. I think last year and the year before, it all got a little silly. And I feel like going forward, the UFC aren't going to be too quick to make those super fights anymore, because whilst they do capture the imagination of the public, you know, look, I mean, they're just stripping Henry Cejudo of the 125 belt. It's going to be Joseph Benavidez taking on Figueiredo, right, for the flyweight title, for the vacant flyweight title, because that's what they got to do. I mean, the only real double champ that's left now is Amanda Nunes, you know, and even her, she's having trouble finding challenges at 145, and I feel... And I'm just assuming here, the only reason that she hasn't been stripped yet is because there isn't anyone at 45 to take her place.
Who are they going to give it to? Yeah, there's nobody that actually makes sense. This is a quote about John Jones from Israel Adesanya, which I thought was an interesting one. That's another thing John Jones said, motherfucking Jones, said Adesanya. He's like, well, when I'm done, I'm glad people can remember my accolades rather than my walkout. It's like, shut the fuck up. People are going to remember you because you're a drug cheat. You're a steroid cheat. That's what they're going to remember. All of the shit you've done after Mauricio Hua In 2011, no one really cares anymore because they know you cheated. You popped in the same month as your brother in 2016. That's all they're going to remember. My walkouts are going to be even greater than his whole career. Wow. So that's some heavy, heavy words right there. But how much truth is there? I mean, I think his image is tarnished for life. I don't think there's any way around it. Anybody who knows anything about MMA, when John Jones' name comes up, they go, well, was he natural? The whole time, was he natural?
Well, unfortunately, that is going to follow him around, and that will be a conversation that takes place forever. And I've got to agree with Adesanya there. I can't go back on my stance and everything I said. I mean, when I fought Anderson Silva, the whole thing I spoke about going up, you're a fucking cheat. You've tested positive for steroids multiple times. So, of course, that applies to John Jones. And I'm not sitting here, I'm not hating on John Jones. I'm not. I'm not being anti-John Jones. I think he's a tremendous champion. But the record shows that I think on two occasions he tested positive. You know, simple as that. So Adesanya is right to bring that up. That's all the ammunition that Israel needs to attack him. And he's got a fair point. You can't argue with it. That is fact. Simple as that.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I mean, you know, the general public doesn't know or even care, really. I got to be honest with you.
No.
The casual fan, they have no idea. And it seems like MMA, you know, debatably the most dangerous sport or one of the most dangerous sports in the world. It's the one sport that people sort of get a pass for when they get caught using performance enhancing drugs. Like, it's not like it was. Do you remember when the bicyclist got caught? What's his name?
Lance Armstrong.
When he got caught using steroids, it was international. It was like crazy. It was like the biggest thing in the world. Like, oh my God, like, holy shit. And the world took notice. And he's riding a bike up a hill. Who cares? Who gives a shit? You guys are going into a cage and trying to murder each other with your fists and feet. And a little slap on the wrist, 6 months, year suspension. All right, cool. No big deal. Whatever.
It's crazy. It's crazy. In mixed martial arts now, the penalties are, you know, they're pretty hard.
They're getting better.
Hopefully, I think.
You saw it made it better.
Getting better.
Yeah.
But like in boxing, it's crazy. In boxing, it's almost like people test positive and it's not even a big thing. And they'll just like move the date of the fight to get around it and things like that. In boxing, it isn't nearly as crushing to a career as it is in mixed martial arts. But you're right. You know, I mean, that's why I'm always such a big advocate of mixed martial arts. And you can find out more about my thoughts on the Bisping documentary, which comes out soon. I have a screening tonight of the documentary. They're flying in from Canada to show it to me tonight. I have a little trailer that they've sent through to me to get my juices flowing, so to speak. Ooh. It's fucking epic. I'll send it to you, but don't share it. But tonight I get to look at the documentary and make some edits. And of course, in that, the reason I brought that up is, you know, I talk about, you know, fighting multiple steroid cheats along the way, you know, and as you said, cycling is one thing. Putting a fucking ball through a basket is one thing. But when you're stepping into a cage with very little rules to try and beat the fuck out of your opponent, and you can dress it up however you want. Ooh, martial arts, highly disciplined, structured, fucking respect, discipline, all this bullshit. You're trying to knock each other out. You're trying to beat each other into unconsciousness, right? So there's no place for steroids. But I've said that many, many times. What else should we discuss?
We got a couple minutes left here before we got to wrap up. But why, do we have a question or two we can get to? No questions. All right. Well, you know, I'll say for a moment real quick before we move on to the next subject.
Whoa. No questions. Believers. I see the comments. You want the 1080p camera, okay? You want this. You want more MMA talk. I will strive. I'm going to pop down to the podcast plaza and buy myself a 1080p, okay? But you got to send in those questions to bympod@gmail.com. We need content to discuss. We need points to break down. We need questions to ponder. Right, Lewis?
Yeah, please do that. And video questions especially. We love the video questions. We love the content, fan art, various things. If you have a rap song you want to record and send to us, we'll debut your rap song on the show.
We'll make you a star.
It's as simple
as that. We've broken many careers on here. I mean, so many people owe the platform of the Believe You Me to their careers. But, you know, listen, Enough about us. What have we got, Lewis?
Shoot us an email, bympod@gmail.com. Also, if you love the show, go to our iTunes right now. Leave us a 5-star ranking and a positive review. Subscribe on our YouTube channel. Just search Believe You Me Podcast or Michael Bisping Podcast on YouTube. You get a little notification every time our show goes live on YouTube. And also, every episode of the show that we've ever done, every episode, the entire On Demand library, is available at your fingertips. Go to gasdigitalnetwork.com. Use the promo code BYM. Get a 14-day free trial. 14-day free trial, pre-release, ad-free, uncensored, and more.
It's not bad. Right. Not bad.
Not bad. I'm good at these plugs.
Where are we going to go? All right. What do you want to do? You're good at the plugs, baby boy. You're good. Even though I don't say that anymore. What have you got?
You definitely just a baby boy. So we need a baby boy fund. So every time you say baby boy, you got to donate $20 to Harrington.
Yeah, well, not going to happen. Okay.
We go excited because
you got excited. I'm like, no. No, if I make a verbal faux pas, it doesn't mean I have to donate to that Harrington. I see you looking at the points there. Just randomly throw something at me. Test my MMA prowess.
We never talked about this. Derek Lewis, this is kind of a fun topic. So I guess there was some boxer that challenged him to, or he said MMA fighters can't box, some like semi-pro boxer or whatever it is. And he went down to Derek Lewis's gym and he was like, I'll challenge the best MMA fighter at your gym, and it turns out it was Derek Lewis. So there's a video of him.
Do we have the footage?
We do. So let's look at the footage real quick.
Oof. I mean, there he is. The black beast in all his bestiality going at him hard. And the guy's face down over the fence.
Ooh.
Fucking hell.
No headgear on black beast either.
Gigantic gloves, but still, I mean, that guy is one of the hardest hitters in the UFC. Look at the guy at the end of it. His face down, slumped over the ropes with his back to Derek Lewis, and he's still saying, you know what? Screw you. You walk in here. You disrespect me, man. You walk in here in front of my people, and you talk to me like this? No. I don't know what that was, but still.
It's not how Derek Lewis talks. What the fuck was that?
No, it was like a Scarface, bloody, you know, hey, you disrespect me, and you walk in here in front of my people. No. Derek Lewis, I've done a very good Derek Lewis impression in the past, okay? That's good. You know, about his cardio and whatnot. You know, unfortunately, this thing happens throughout history. Dojo storming, they used to call it. You know what I mean? But this guy's a fucking idiot. Because people know these days, MMA fighters aren't just grapplers. They can box. They can punch. And when you're the size of Derek Lewis, as we know, it only needs one. That guy's an idiot, man. I mean, I reckon if he walked in, I mean, he must have been high, drunk, on drugs, something, to walk in there and say, right, what kind of dickhead does that? Walks into a gym and says, I want to challenge the best fighter here. Who does that?
I have no idea. I mean, probably somebody that's just looking for a quick
hit.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a quick, you know, here's the reality. Ready? If you get your ass kicked by a UFC fighter, you're still kind of badass. Like, you're not badass, but you still get to go like, all right, well, I went in and I stood toe-to-toe with a UFC fighter. He kicked my ass, but it's Derek Lewis. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, let's see what you would do. At least I had the balls to go do it. So I kind of understand. It was a pro boxer, though. This wasn't just some fucking dude. This was actually a boxer. Do we know any more information about the guy, Harrington?
Yeah, so he was coming to the gym for weeks calling out their best MMA fighters, saying, you know, he's a boxer. Any boxer will beat up any MMA fighter. Give me your best.
Is there a name? Does he have a name?
I will look that up right now.
Name and shame. But here's the thing, right? Listen, here's what you do in fighting. If you're taking on a boxer, you box, you brawl the boxer or you box the brawler. You know what I mean? So it's like Derek Lewis ain't going to stand toe to toe and try and bloody go back and forth with a technical sparring match, especially when the guy's been calling people out for weeks. He's going to say, all right, dickhead, get in the ring, combine the king, get in the king. Okay. Put the fucking gloves on and let's have done with this. And you could see there was weeks and weeks and weeks of buildup because he was like, fuck you. When he had his back turned, he delivered a few more blows. I've got another one for you, Lewis. There's a very, very good Instagram account that everyone should follow, McDojo Life. Okay. And on McDojo Life, they out basically a lot of these fake martial artists. You know what I mean? These people that feel they have magical powers and they can just touch somebody and they fly across a room. It's a really, really fun Instagram page. I suggest everybody listening to me right now gives them a follow. If you're into mixed martial arts, if you're into martial arts, or you just want to have a fun Instagram account, McDojo Life. And they put one on there. When dojo storming goes wrong, take a look at this one. This poor guy gets kicked to fuck. Same thing. goes in and says, you know, I'll take you on with my traditional style. I don't see a video, Harrington. Oh, here we go. He asked the instructor, so who am I going to destroy? Okay, let's get ready. For the audio listeners, he had the look of drawing David Black Wolf Lopez and had to be convinced to wear MMA gloves. I wanted to go gloveless because he was such a badass. This has throwbacks to UFC 1, unfortunately. But here we go.
Jesus
and what
Christ.
You've got is not even a particularly good MMA fighter just beating the fuck out of some poor guy. Oh, he kicked him in the face on the floor. Uh-oh. What a feel for the guy.
Disqualification. Actually, he lost his fight. This guy's... Jesus Christ.
This poor guy is getting kicked to foot. Look at him. He's like, no, I'm good. Does it carry on? Oh, yeah. Round three. Oh, big left hook done. He goes down. And that's that, I think.
Yeah.
Hold on. He's back up, but I think that's good. Is he going to carry on? He's like, hold on a minute. Let me just put my hands on my knees, pretend. Oh, just let me just scratch my nose. Okay, let's go. I'm in my stance. Spinning back kick to the thigh. Weird move.
Jesus Left Christ. Hand. Block your fucking face. Put your hands up, sir.
Get your fucking hands up and do some cardio.
Oh! I mean, in MMA, I mean, what?
Right.
Why would in like Taekwondo or like any sort of traditional martial arts, like, at what point do they learn, like, this isn't the stance in fighting? At one point we learned in through practical fighting, like, this is not the way to stand when somebody's trying to attack you. So why don't they just sort of give that up?
No, well, some people, yeah, even boxers, once you get confident, you can pimp the motherfucker, you get a read on their timing and things like that. You can fight with your hands down. Sometimes it's better. When I'm sparring and I know I'm way better, I like to have my hands down. You can hit them with all kinds of creative shots that they don't see coming. But here's the thing. I feel sorry for that guy because that guy is a victim of these fake martial arts, these people that go out there and they pretend to be masters and they teach these students and they, you know, this poor guy is obviously brainwashed by the people where he trains. Or these are secret techniques and, you know, just one finger I can touch you and you will fall over. So it's a shame for this guy. And then he walks in there. Listen, this is what I always say. Traditional martial arts are beautiful. They're a great thing for anybody to be involved with. But unfortunately, a lot of what is taught in traditional martial arts will not work in a real life combat situation. As that guy just found out very, very painfully, our time is up. I see Lewis stressing. I want to respond. I want to hear it.
So it's funny because there, I mean, there's, you hear that a lot about like karate based MMA fighters. There's a few.
Karate's great. I'm not talking about karate. Karate's great. Karate is a fantastic martial art, especially Kyokushin karate. Fuck me. They're bad motherfuckers. They will hit you and hit you hard. You know, Lyoto Mashida, a very good proponent of Kyokushin. But, you know, but I'm talking about some of these, like, very, very weird styles. You know what I mean? These, you know, whatever. I don't want to badmouth them. But a lot of traditional martial arts is, you know, a lot of these flowery throws that they do ain't going to work. Or not going to work, simple as that. But sorry, you were saying.
Well, no, I mean, I think that, look, it's great to get them into it. Like, when I put my son, the first thing he did was he did, like, Taekwondo. And it wasn't because I wanted him to learn how to defend himself. What I wanted him to do was I wanted him to sort of get used to being in a martial art and being in a situation where he's with a team and listening to an instructor and going through those beats. And I think it can inspire, you know, it can inspire you to go very far in it. But I think if you are trying, like, it's kind of, I think it's fucked up to say to a kid who may be getting bullied, right? And to go, well, if you're going to get bullied, bring him on down to my, you know, Taekwondo or my, you know, whatever school, and we're going to make sure that he, you know, now has the tools to defend himself. The reality is some kid from the fucking projects or from some trailer park is going to beat the shit out of this kid who's trying to do katas in the middle of a schoolyard.
Yeah, listen, I mean, as I said, traditional martial arts are fantastic. I'm getting Lucas to enroll in Taekwondo. And that's me as been a UFC fighter, mixed martial artist my entire life pretty much. But it has a place. You know, you put them in a strict, disciplined environment. You know, you get to meet new people. They got to turn up on time. They got to do as they're told. They got to stand in line. They got to bow. It's respectful. You're learning. They do the stretches. They learn some kicking techniques and things like that. It's all well and good. And all martial arts offer that similar kind of thing. And it's a very, very positive environment to be around. I'm just saying that a lot of it doesn't cross over to a real life. Like Aikido. I don't know. You know, Steven Seagal has, you know, gone on that he's, you know, a badass, but I don't know if Aikido, I've never seen anyone in the UFC saying I've been working on my fucking Aikido for this fight. You know what I mean? Kung Fu, again, I'm a little skeptical of Kung Fu. Ninjutsu, all right, fair play. The guy's got nunchuckers and a sword. I'm on my bike. I'm running away. But there's a lot of bullshit martial arts out there, okay? I'm just telling you right now. And they're all listening to this and going, you're wrong, Michael. I will give you my two-finger death punch and you will fall over. Guess what? No, I won't. I will laugh in your face. I will fucking stick the nut on you and you will be unconscious. Simple as that. I won't even break a sweat. It's just this. Look. That's it. Boom. Headbutt. Done. Glasgow kiss, baby. Right in the fucking face. Boom on your fucking nose. Right. Broken nose. Get yourself down to casualty. See you later, mate. That's our show. That's the end of the fucking episode, mate. Take care, pal. All the best.
Goodbye.